on shortwave, satellite, and the internet, this is Media Network Plus.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the program. Now, actually, we've been very good, and we really haven't talked very much about U.S. President Donald Trump since he's been in office. Well, in the immediate aftermath of last week's shooting of a U.S. Republican Congressman, Steve Scalise, there was a brief coming together on Capitol Hill. But it was a rare moment of tolerance in what has become an increasingly intolerant media landscape in covering the Trump administration. Now, this week marked 5 months since Donald Trump's inauguration as U.S. president, and his relationship with the press is just as combative and as hostile as it was on his first day of office. Fran Kelly speaks next to Dana Milbank, who's a Washington Post columnist.
I do not know how we can sustain this level of intensity and hostility for 44 more months. I don't know how it's going to end, but my guess is badly. Would it come to violence? I don't know. I wouldn't predict that. But I do think that this country would be even further and irrevocably divided, and they would not forget it for a long, long time, because they would believe what? They would believe that this establishment was out to get Trump from the first day, and it wanted to take him down. And I think they would be right.
That's former advisor to Richard Nixon, Pat Buchanan, speaking to SBS over the weekend about what he sees as a media war on Donald Trump. Well, Dana Milbank is a columnist with the Washington Post. He's in Sydney at the moment as a guest of the US Studies Centre, and he joins me in our breakfast studio. Dana Milbank, welcome to RM Breakfast.
Good to be with you, Fran.
Is he right, Pat Buchanan, when he says that the media establishment has been out to get Donald Trump from day one, or at least that's how people will see it or are seeing it?
Well, there certainly is a great deal of hostility on both sides. I think it was it's more of a defensive reaction from the media. This president went after the media during the campaign and then began to talk about the fake news media has been threatening to rewrite our First Amendment protections. Freedom of the press has threatened to use the infrastructure of the government to go after our owners and publishers, has even banned or organizations such as mine from covering his event. So I think what you're seeing is sort of the president took on the notion of a free press in America, and he's seeing the natural backlash to that, and that is the institutions of a free society push back. It's the free press. It's the courts have been reacting strongly to Trump. There's now the justice system has got a special prosecutor in place. The intelligence and law enforcement communities have been horrified, and that's why you see all these extraordinary leaks coming out into the media. So I think Pat Buchanan, who I know well, is correct that there's a great deal of hostility, but it's not, I think it's been generated by the president himself. And when you talk about the media in America, of course, it's splintered and into all kinds of factions. And so Fox News has been our conservative cable news outlet, has been very friendly towards the president. And he certainly has his amen choir within the American media.
Do you think Donald Trump himself understands what he was doing, what he has been doing with his comments and threats, if you like, against the media and the media organisations, and the implications of that, the things that we're seeing, like the leaks from the security agencies, the formation of a special prosecutor, these things, are they out of the norm, or are these kind of within the political norm of what will happen if, you know, A leads to B?
Well, everything we're seeing in the United States now is outside of the norm. Everything is in this uncharted territory. I think what happened is this president has, 32 million or some such Twitter followers, and he said, right, I can communicate with the American people, with my supporters specifically, without this filter. Now, every president, Democrat or Republican, has tried this sort of thing. None to this sort of an extent, who figured that he could completely sidestep the media and communicate with the public directly. I think he is finding out that you can do that to some extent. We all wake up at about 6 a.m. in Washington to see what the president's tweeting about that day, and that does tend to drive the agenda and has everybody pulling their hair out. But it's not; it does not seem to have served him well, because many people have come to regard the president as somewhat of a loose cannon, a bit unhinged. And I think that's why you see the backlash, not just from the media, but from the courts, even many in his own party in Congress are saying things are out of control. we need to put the brakes on.
But not his supporters. They're still supporting him. So they don't seem to be perturbed by the behavior at all.
Well, yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yes and no. There has been 35 to 40% of the public approves of what this president's doing. They've always been there with him. He famously said during the campaign he could shoot a gun on Fifth Avenue in New York and he wouldn't lose any support. True to some extent. There's a lot of people who just can't stand the Washington establishment, never mind if the president's appointed a lot of people who are part of that establishment. But what you see within that, say, 35% of the American public supporting Trump, the majority of them used to support him very strongly. If you look at what's going on in the polls now, that's fallen away. So now it's only about 20% of the public that support him strongly. That other 15% or so of his supporters are saying, okay, I like the guy. I'm not really sure I love what I'm seeing right now. So you can see within his supporters, a lot of people are having second thoughts and growing a bit weaker in their belief in him.
You're a long-time Washington watcher, Dana. I mean, what's your take on this president? He was never going to be a conventional president. That was clear. That's part of what got him elected. Do you think he really understands what he's doing? So this whole thing about fake news and, you know, limiting media access and bashing up the media, in a sense, all part of what he says, you know, draining the swamp of the elites, taking on the elites. He's creating a narrative which is at times becoming a dominant narrative. That's exactly what he wants, isn't it?
I suppose to some extent, and this is what he did during the campaign now, and the notion of taking on the elites. He's not just taking on the media. He's taking on people within his own administration, his own Justice Department, his own intelligence community, his own FBI, members of his own party. So I think what you see is a president just sort of lashing out, unaware of what the consequences may be. The president's very savvy in terms of marketing and presenting himself, but what he's finding out is the machine of government is not responding to that terribly well. So 5 months into this administration, there have been no major legislative accomplishments. He's managed to get most of the rest of the world either hostile to him or at the very least frightened and wary of what he's doing. The consequences have not necessarily been good. It's hard to see. He's basically one-eighth of the way through his term, and we are just all exhausted. That's what you were talking about, Pat Buchanan, earlier. I don't see how we can go through another 3.5 years of things on this trajectory at this pace.
Maybe part of the exhaustion is because media outlets around the world are falling for the notion of just focusing on Donald Trumpisms, if you like, the negative aspects of Trump, rather than focusing on the policy and on also the electorate that elected him and the issues that led to that. Is that part of the problem, or can they be excused because, as you said, there's really been no major policy achievements yet by this
right. Well, certainly the things that elected Donald Trump are very real, and it's happening in other countries as well. But there's a widening gap between rich and poor. Many folks, particularly in manufacturing, in rural areas of the country, are being left behind. It's a huge problem that's developed over a long period of time. So Donald Trump, in many ways, is the wrong answer to a very real problem. But yes, to focus on the particular policy. There's been no attempt by this president to focus on the policies. There's been a lot of undoing of the policies of the Obama administration, from health care to our relations with Cuba. But there hasn't been a whole lot that sort of addresses that underlying economic inequality that's leaving so many people behind. I find when the media focus on matters of policy, no matter what people say, they don't actually want to read that sort of thing.
Politics takes its toll on families. Dana Milbank. Dana is a columnist with the Washington Post. Last week, Ivanka Trump told Fox News she's been blindsided by the viciousness of Washington. Let's hear that.
There's a level of viciousness that I was not expecting. I was not expecting the intensity of this experience. My father and this administration intends to be transformative, and we want to do big, bold things, and we're looking to change the status quo. So I didn't expect it to be easy. I think some of the distractions and some of the ferocity, I was a little blindsided by on a personal level.
That's Ivanka Trump speaking to Fox News. Is there a new level of viciousness against the Trump family and administration? And do you think in any way that's contributed to a climate that led to that shooting of the Republican senators during that baseball game last week.
Well, I wrote about that statement that Ivanka Trump made, and it is correct that, look, before Donald Trump ran his campaign and became the president, things in Washington were already broken, and it reached a whole new level of vitriol. Now it's an order of magnitude beyond that. But my argument is, of course, that begins at the top. That began during the campaign when the president, when his top advisors were leading chants of lock her up, referring to Hillary Clinton, people talking about whether she should be executed, the constant talk of violence at Donald Trump's rallies. That has continued on into his presidency when he takes on the judicial system and raises questions about so-called judges. Both sides, all sides in America now seem to be on this sort of heightened state of alert and ready to take umbrage. The shooting, the tragic shooting of last week, any one event like that is the work of a madman. Mm. So I don't believe you can pin any one event to the climate, but the climate is awful. And invariably, when things are so awful, when opponents are dehumanized, I mean, just the other day, one of the president's sons said, Democrats are not even people. They're not even human. So I suggested to Ivanka Trump that if you're concerned about the viciousness, you need to think about a comment like that your brother made. All sides need to pull back from this precipice we're on, because, of course, there's inevitably going to be violence. And as importantly, nothing's going to get done in our country.
Well, this past week, North Korea has been in the news once again after the death of Otto Warmbier, the American that was held for 17 months. He returned to the United States last week in a coma and died earlier this week from the coma that he was in. Now, North Korea, as we have talked about before, is one of the most secretive states in the world. Very little international news is seen in the country, and getting news outside of the DPRK is a challenge in itself. If you're a foreign journalist and you go to the DPRK, you are surrounded by minders who tell you, well, what to photograph, or even who to interview. And of course, if you do manage to get an interview with somebody, chances are that person is not speaking freely. Next, how to smuggle news out of the DPRK, that's the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Richard Ady speaks next to Bradley Martin. He's a journalist, author, and academic. He was formerly the correspondent for Newsweek, The Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg News, and The Baltimore Sun. He wrote a book in 2005 called The Loving Care of the Fatherly Leader, North Korea and the Kim Dynasty. He speaks next to Richard Ady.
You get in as often as you can, and for me lately that's been only as a tourist. They won't let me in as a journalist any longer. I guess they don't want anybody who knows what he's talking about to come and report on the country. So you go in and you make these comparisons by going in, every few years and see if you can notice any difference. And you also, of course, interview defectors at great length. And South Korea in recent years has received a lot of North Korean defectors. There may be 20,000 of them now. So in the earlier days, the scholars and academics and analysts for governments were wary of defector testimony because there were very few defectors, and some of them seemed to be basically trying to come up with wild stories and outdo each other so they could get paid for it or become famous. But by the time I started doing this, there were enough defectors that you could really cross-check among a lot of people. So that was my reporting method.
You're also involved in translating the work, I understand, of citizen journalists from inside North Korea.
I was the copy editor for a compilation of the work of Im Jin-gang. That is a group of citizen journalists who report to a Japanese journalist in Osaka. And I must say I was really very, very impressed with the reporting that they had done.
What stories have they been telling?
Well, they've been telling real stories about real people. Here's what it's actually like to live in and work and try to survive in North Korea. So, for example, they can tell you, you know, the price of rice in a whole number of different localities that their correspondents have been reporting from. Or they can tell you, are people actually starving? They have people on the scene.
How do you do
anonymous,
that?
Anonymous people, of course.
But how do you do that? How can you train people when it's hard to even reach people in that country?
Okay, well, the gentleman who started that organization hung out on the border, on the Chinese side of the border, and met a number of North Koreans who had either escaped or were in China on business or just visiting family or whatever. And several of them showed signs of wanting to do what he did for a living. And they wanted to be they wanted to go back in as journalists. So he said, okay. He trained them, and he gave them miniature video cameras and recording devices and sent them back in. And they meet up with him, I guess, maybe once a year or so, and hand over the miniaturized, digitalized output. Some of this can be very small and easily smuggled. So,
still, it would be enormously risky, wouldn't it, to do this? That you would think
It is. It's terribly risky, and these are very brave people. And I doubt they're making a whole lot of money for it. But still, is it enough to compensate for the possibility that you could be stood up and executed publicly with your whole family watching and then have your family sent off to the gulag for three generations? So, you know, I have to say they're very brave. And I'm pretty impressed by this.
I've seen of it, Bradley. There's some pictures and associated texts which seem to say that these soldiers who are part of a group who build sort of special projects for the government are starving, and they certainly look extraordinarily emaciated. But how do we know that this is in fact true? Because surely anyone motivated enough to take these risks and get these stories out has an agenda.
Okay, well, the if they have an agenda, it would be probably generally critical of the regime. That is, if they're risking their lives to get information out, and the regime is determined that they should not get this information out, then they are by definition anti-regime. The consumers of this news, who include not only you and me, but a whole lot of other journalists as well, who read all of this and process it and decide, okay, that's a reputable organization or that's not. You just watch them for a while and compare it with what you get from other places. You cross check, and there have been suspicions, for example, of one organization somewhat like this. It was called Good Friends, and they were putting out bulletins on what people said inside the country. They hadn't trained journalists so much, but they had their sources, and they were based in Seoul. Mm. And you know, these days it's possible in many cases to speak with people on phone, you know, cell phones inside North Korea. So they were getting information out about, a lot of it was about the food supply, and people who watched this sort of thing carefully suspected that it was a bit exaggerated, because they were in the business of soliciting funds for food aid to North Korea. So if Good Friends came out and said there was starvation, it got to the point where some of us would say, yeah, but let's hear it from somebody else. I want to hear this from the Daily NK or from Im Jin-gan. I want to hear it from somebody who doesn't have a dog in the race.
It sounds like there has been, unbeknownst to most of us, a sort of a quiet revolution, in that there is now, in the last few years, a lot more information, still not enough, but a lot more getting out.
Yes, that's right. And that's why, for me personally, I don't see any percentage in my trying to compete with these guys. You know, I mean, they're native North Koreans. How am I going to beat them at finding the news? But, you know, I don't envy young Western and Australian reporters who are sitting in Seoul and hoping to report wondrous things about what's happening inside North Korea, because it's mostly going to come from these agencies, these new organizations, which are really a wonderful development, I think.
Thank you very much for giving us your insights today, Bradley.
It's my pleasure, Richard.
That was journalist Bradley Martin, who also authored the book Under the Loving Care of the Fatherly Leader, North Korea and the Kim Dynasty. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file. The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
And by the way, in the July edition of the Spectrum Monitor, there is an article there by yours truly, which is actually about RTHK, that's Radio Television Hong Kong, and that's in the July edition of the Spectrum Monitor. All right, let's take now a listen or look at what's happening with propagation, what has been happening, and what we can expect. Here's Glenn Hauser.
Keith from Space Weather Services Australia, the global HF propagation forecast through June 24th. Normal at low and middle latitudes, normal to fair at high latitudes. From Space Weather South Africa through June 24th, magnetic conditions unsettled, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From the Space Environment Prediction Center of China, greatest planetary A index of 22 on July 13th. Little variation in solar flux between 73 and 75 through July 18th. From Met Office UK through June 25th, solar activity low or very low, geomagnetic activity mainly quiet to unsettled. From FK Yonda, OK1HH of the Czech Propagation Interest Group, the geomagnetic field will be active to disturbed on June 23rd, 24th, July 9th and 10th. Quiet to active on June 25th, 29th, 30th, July 2nd, 8th, and 11th. Mostly quiet on June 26th, 28th, and July 6th. Quiet to unsettled again June 26th and July 3rd. Quiet on June 27th, July 1st, 4th, 5th, and 7th. From Space Weather Canada, the greatest DRX nanoteslas will be in the auroral zone on July 9th and 10th. From SWPC in Boulder, the geomagnetic field likely active on June 23rd and 24th and July 14th with ANK indices of 12 and 4 and reaching G1 minor geomagnetic storm levels on July 13th with ANK of 20 and 5. Solar flux rising from 70 June 26th to a peak of only 77 on July 8th and 9th. William Hepburn's VHF UHF DX maps show extreme tropospheric ducting all week, at least through June 24th, off the coasts of Southern California and Baja California, all week off the northwest coast of Africa, around the Canary Islands, and all around the Arabian Peninsula, as far as India, across the central and eastern Mediterranean, and also along the coast of Angola, June 24th to 27th.
Thanks a lot, Glenn. And with that, we've come to the end of this edition of the program. If you want to get in touch with us to let us know what you think, we'd love to hear from you. Our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. Once again, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Perron, wishing you well, saying so long, take care. We'll see you in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine.
This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio.
As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine.
This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel.
As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. As I and I say, no bird can fly on one wing. Neither a plane can manage with one engine.
This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel. On channel. This is Olivia Radio. Call live on channel.